You're listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Hello and welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. Thanks for making the Crosscheck NHL Show your first listen every Tuesday and Thursday. We're free and available on all platforms. My name is Mary Clark, staff writer for The Wind, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mary C. Clark. I'm here with Scott Matla, co-host of the Locked On Canadiens podcast, right here on the Locked On Network. On this Thursday edition of the Crosscheck, Andrew is unavailable to podcast this week, so Scott is here to fill in for the day. It's been a while since we last had an episode, so we've got lots to catch up on, from the World Junior cancellations to the Winter Classic. Next, Scott and I will discuss the state of the Oilers, who are in the midst of yet another spiral down the standings. And finally, we'll end the show with what we're looking forward to in the NHL now that the 2022 season is here. So, Scott, before we start off today's show, how are you doing?
I'm doing about as well as we could be. It's been a busy couple of weeks with the holidays through Christmas and then through New Year's, and then COVID outbreaks just absolutely destroying teams, and in particular covering the Canadiens for Locked On Canadiens here. It was rough watching a 16-man team play. It's an AHL, ECHL team against the Florida Panthers. I'm very grateful for the break, but I am sad that it had to come at the expense of player health and not something more fun like the Olympics or something else right now.
Yeah, there's really been a lot of that going on. And obviously, the voice you hear is Scott Matla of Locked On Canadiens, because Andrew isn't here. He's dealing with family stuff. I was dealing with family stuff last week. So hopefully next week we're going to get back to our normal regular recording. But yes, it's been a very weird time in the NHL right now, from like I said, the cancellation of the World Juniors, which is the first thing we're going to talk about. We're going to blitz through this news because we already been through all this stuff, but it's been a long time since, you know, we talked. So I'm going to just, you know, run through this news. So like I said, the World Juniors were canceled. It was a big thing when it happened. They got just basically a few days into the tournament, and that had to cancel because COVID outbreaks ran rampant among multiple countries. The IIHF is hopeful to have a tournament rescheduled in the summer, but you know, that's pretty much up in the air. It's really funny that they're going to look to reschedule the men's World Juniors when the women's worlds were canceled right before the men's tournament started, and there was, you know, a big uproar about, you know, the lack of basically respect to women's hockey. But you know, as for the men's side, it really seems like there were no protocols to speak of. There was no like real bubble. It just seemed to be handled poorly from all sides in this tournament. And it basically resulted in the World Juniors being canceled until further notice. And, you know, maybe a rescheduled tournament, but it kind of sucks for everybody who's really into the World Juniors. I've mentioned on the show, I'm not the biggest World Juniors person because I'm not Canadian, but Scott, you probably have a different thought on this because you are Canadian.
Oh, I'm not Canadian. I'm American. I live in New York. I thought we knew this.
Scott.
Mary, we've worked in different places multiple times and you thought I was Canadian this entire time.
Yeah, I think it's because you've worked for years on a Canadian's, you know, blog and then a Canadian show. So I think you're just an honorary Canadian in my eyes. I think you should take that badge with pride because there are a lot of really good Canadians and there's one on this show in terms of Andrew. So, but still, you probably have followed the World Juniors a lot throughout your career. So do you have any thoughts, I guess, in the World Juniors? Like, I know this is like a couple weeks, it feels like a couple weeks old at this point because so much has happened, but, do you have any thoughts? Because that is like, that literally happened right after we stopped recording for Christmas. It happened like a couple days after Christmas. So, but do you have any thoughts on it, Scott?
My first thought was the IIHF should be ashamed of themselves for outright canceling women's under 18 worlds for the second year in a row without any hope of giving that a reschedule. And the first thing they did when they had to cancel World Juniors due to their own ineptitude of handling the bubble, and I use those terms lightly because it was not, there was a wedding at the same hotel as teams were staying at in Red Deer. It's not a good look. And then you outright canceled the women's tournaments and said, we're not rescheduling, we're not doing this. But the minute that this tournament was canceled due to COVID outbreaks that started with a few players, and then it was a few more players, then it was on-ice officials, then it was off-ice officials. It spiraled so quickly. Your first action was, we have to reschedule this. It's embarrassing and it's a disgrace for the way they're handling the sport of women's hockey, is that it's the under 18 tournament. It's not a moneymaker, but it's such a huge developmental step for that next generation of women's hockey in Canada, in the United States, and in other countries. And taking that away from them 2 years in a row is a huge disservice to them. It, across the board, the IIHF looks really, really bad coming out of all of this. And to be honest, they should wear it. It should be an absolute dunce cap on Luke Tardif in the IIHF going forward. It's embarrassing. And all the backlash and the negative response they've gotten is well-earned. It's one of the few times I've seen every corner of hockey fandom on Twitter go, really? Is this what we're doing? So it sucks because I do love World Juniors. I've gotten to cover World Juniors in person. It is so much fun, but this year felt, with everything leading into it, with the other cancellations and forcing this one ahead, it all just kind of felt wrong, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It just, there's just so much. I mean, it felt like the Omicron variant basically just kind of snuck up on us all, basically, and has, you know, thrown everything into chaos. And we're still dealing with it because it's still ravaging through us. Just in general, the general population. But you're right about the women's team. I hope that the IIHF wears this and reconsiders, because I believe they talked about maybe rescheduling the women's tournament too. So I hope that they take the criticism to heart. But it's the IIHF. And I don't necessarily trust their track record, but it would be nice to get both a women's tournament and a men's tournament this upcoming summer, but we'll just have to see. So from the World Juniors, we move to the NHL coming back from its holiday break, sort of, kind of. The NHL had extended its holiday break and then had come back from it kind of a day later because games kept getting, you know, our teams were still dealing with COVID outbreaks. But the big things are the taxi squads are coming back or are back. And a lot of Canadian games have been moved due to attendance restrictions. But here in the United States, everything is proceeding as normal for the most part. But up in Canada, a lot of different teams are moving their games because there's attendance restrictions. It's affecting teams like you cover, Scott, like the Montreal Canadiens. Meanwhile, the Flyers, the team that, you know, I'm a big fan of, they are in California for a West Coast road trip, and it felt like they've been in California for years. So any thoughts on how the NHL has come back from its break in terms of, you know, where we're at with like COVID stuff, how the Canadiens are? I mean, I know the Canadiens are miserable right now, but there is kind of a difference between how the games are being handled in America versus games are being handled in Canada.
Well, my first thought is, and we talked about it a little bit in the intro here, is that there are more players in protocol and on the injured list for the Canadians than are healthy on the roster right now. They have one remaining player on an NHL contract in the AHL to recall for any situation, and that's it. The team's so decimated, and the NHL went, you have 16 players. Go play this game against one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. It's fine. All that happened was one of their NHL regulars got injured in that game, and they are down to 10 healthy forwards at that point. The response has been terrible, and a lot of people have pointed out that it's like, well, Carolina and Florida had to play with 16 players. They couldn't recall other players due to cap space issues. The Canadians don't have anyone to recall.
Yeah, they, you're pulling guys from the ECHL,
He went from ECHL third line, Cam Hillis, to NHL power play. That's how bad this team is beat up. And they allowed a guy with a pending test to play in this game. And guess, or not in that game against Carolina. And guess what happened? More people got COVID. Like, the NHL's response and their protocols is, I said ghoulish when I recorded our show with Laura, but it's all in the name of trying to save as much money and make as much money as they can. And it's kind of sad to see it, you know, thrown in that way. I don't love it. And I don't love it for any team. I don't like watching the Islanders go through a COVID outbreak again, watching the Panthers play with 11 forwards, watching, you know, emergency backup goalies have to potentially play every other night, it's a little bit scary to watch it happen, because all I can think is you're going to have some kid who's not ready for the speed and physicality of the NHL, and he's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And just COVID itself, is scary enough with all these players around there. But with this longstanding break for the Canadians, at least, and some of these teams in Canada, I'm hoping that there is a round of everyone is getting healthy. At least I don't want anyone being sick and having their career damaged. Like, the goalie, I'm forgetting his name right now in Edmonton, but I feel Alex Stalock. I don't want anyone having their career cut short over this to play a game in front of a half full arena. It's not worth it. It's never been worth it in that regard.
Yeah, I completely agree. It really does suck. And just this whole situation, I know the NHL wants to get their 82 games in, but it is, you know, it's we're in not only a terrible situation, but it's a scary one, like you said. And the players are also starting to notice it. Last night, after the Flyers played, Carter Hart, I thought, had a really good quote where he said, guys are testing positive with no symptoms or mild symptoms. I mean, the league's got to find a way to change that. We're either going to keep playing shorthanded all season long, or games are going to keep getting postponed. I think it's a joke. It's got to change. I think this is a pretty strong quote. I mean, Carter Hart, from the times I've talked to him, isn't like, he's a pretty calm, soft-spoken guy. Obviously, I didn't watch the quote as it was being said, but that's still a pretty strong quote. So NHL players are starting to get restless about this all too. And, you know, I thought the NHL would have thought that, you know, they had the holiday break, this is going to be behind us, but no, we're still in this. And it feels like we're going to keep getting cancellations. I mean, for now, the NHL is just going to run with it as it is, and, you know, keep the postponements and teams playing shorthanded until, I guess, something dramatic happens, because at least they can play games right now, at least from the NHL's perspective. So we're kind of at a weird place right now with hockey games, where some teams are playing, some teams aren't. But the last big thing in this NHL news catch-up before we head to break is the Winter Classic happened in Minnesota. I think that all kind of snuck up on us a little bit, just because there wasn't a lot of fanfare. I think heading into it, a lot of it because of COVID. The thing that did pique my interest was it's the coldest outdoor NHL game on record, because it was freezing out in Minnesota. And the Blues won 6-4 in their game at Target Field against the Wild, and I had fun watching it. I mean, maybe it's just because I'm so worn down with, you know, sad NHL news and depressing NHL news. It was nice to just watch an event that was just supposed to be about hockey itself. Like, I get, you know, COVID and everything is still rampant, and, you know, obviously I hope people were safe, but still, it was just kind of nice to just watch a hockey game that's supposed to be about the atmosphere, it's supposed to be about the fans, it's supposed to be about fun. So did you watch the Winter Classic, Scott? I asked this because some people kind of are not a big fan of the outdoor games in the NHL anymore, but I still have a soft spot for the Winter Classic, especially.
I had it on in the background. Like, I had gotten back from running around and working on Saturday because there was a Bills game here in Buffalo on Sunday. So I had to work late, making sure everything is set up for all the tailgaters and such. So I came home and turned that on and kind of watched that in the background that night. And one, freezing is correct. Even, you know, in those stadiums, when it is cold, cold. And I think one of the things that put me off is I'm used to my New Year's tradition being waking up kind of hungover on New Year's Day, settling in to watch the Winter Classic at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they're always talking about the sun and this and that. And it's like, it's pitch black. It's like 15 below zero outside. And it's two teams that I have no real vested interest in, but they still put on a great game. And the Winter Classic for me is one of those, it's a special thing. When now that they've kind of reduced how many outdoor games there are here, we're not having like six or seven. It retains some of that mystique again, and it was a lot of fun. It was a good game. I know the Wild almost pulled off the comeback. They really were pushing late. It was enjoyable to watch, and you know what? Great jersey matchup for once, I guess. Most people usually hate the Winter Classic jerseys, but I had fun watching this too, and I'm glad that this is one of the games that didn't get pushed off. I don't think they ever would have, but – there's a lot to be said about outdoor games. There is something special about them when they're done right. And like I said, doing a few a year, one or two most, helps keep it special. And it doesn't make it feel like it's getting old or a novelty at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And that leads perfectly into my final question before we had to break, because we had back in 2021 also the Lake Tahoe games, which were really unique. Is there a dream outdoor game location you would love to see the NHL go to? Because for me, I've beat the drum for years of a Flyers Penguins matchup at Beaver Stadium in Penn State, because I went to Penn State. So, you know, I have that connection there. I know it's kind of a unique place. They've been to college stadiums before. They went to Michigan. So that's just kind of like my, I guess, white whale of outdoor game locations. But is there any, Scott, that you can think of that, you know, would really be special to you, just either a personal level or just from the visuals or just a cool factor?
A lot of people talk about Lake Louise as one, but it all depends on like fan, because like the Rideau Canal in Ottawa, I think would be a really fun one to do a classic Canadian matchup. We've never had a Habs Leafs outdoor game. And I think that's one the NHL should look into doing. And it's hard to figure out where you could put it, but my thought would be if you could make it work somewhere in Montreal or at BMO Field in Toronto and make it happen. It's not so much a location, it's the game that I want to see. And I, unfortunately, both Toronto and Montreal being the way that they are, you don't get as much of the stadium seating like you do like at Beaver Stadium or at the Big House or things like that. Have they done Notre Dame? Have they done a game in South Bend or no?
Oh man, why do I feel like they have? Let me check. Vamp for a second for me, Scott, because
I'm gonna do my best, because I'm thinking of like famous college stadiums. I'm like, if they haven't done one in South Bend, that feels like a pretty good answer. Like they've done Yankee Stadium, they've done Fenway Park, they've done, you know, major baseball stadiums and classics.
Yeah, they did. It was
Me it was the Rangers.
No, it was in 2019. It was the Blackhawks and Bruins.
It was the Blackhawks, yeah, in an outdoor game. Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, at Notre Dame Stadium.
I would definitely think Lambeau then. Packers fan, it doesn't get more frozen than the frozen tundra. So I don't know who they would put there. If you put the Wild there, they're going to get booed off the ice, even if they're the home team. So I would like to see that, but obviously it's hard to schedule around the Packers, who are usually in the playoffs at that time too. So Lambeau, I think, is my actual like definitive answer for this. I'd love to see an outdoor hockey game there.
I think that's a pretty popular choice too, because it's an iconic location. The NHL's been to a lot of iconic locations, and it's surprising they haven't been there yet, but you're right. Scheduling is probably a nightmare. But coming up next after the break, we're going to talk just a little bit about one of the big stories that is really come around in the NHL right now is the Oilers. They're spiraling out again, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. And hey, maybe, you know, trade McDavid, wink, wink, coming up right after the break. All right, Scott. So the Oilers are spiraling, and it is bad again. We've seen this before from this team. Full disclosure, we're recording Wednesday before their game Wednesday night, so we won't have their I believe they're playing the Leafs on Wednesday night, so we won't have the result of that game. But considering the trajectories of both teams, I can kind of guess where it's going to go. But since December 1st, the Oilers have gone 3-8-2 after starting the season super hot. They had a 4-1 loss to the Rangers on Monday, which is why I saw a lot of people talking about trade McDavid, Connor McDavid wanting out. I was wondering why I saw a Tuesday morning people talking about a McDavid trade. I'm like, what is happening? Did someone report something? No, it's just because frustrations are starting to boil over. They're basically barely holding on to a wild card spot with 38 points. That was at least when I wrote this. It could be different now, as it stands on Wednesday. But yeah, they're still in the last wildcard spot with 38 points. But like I said, they're barely hanging on. The Jets, the Kings are right behind them at 37 points. So, Scott, what is wrong with this Oilers team? And I mean, the big question at the end I'm going to ask is the McDavid question. But what's happening with this Oilers team?
Well, their goaltending is not very good, which is a thought that every single person knew going into this season, is that you cannot rely on Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith. Sure, Mike Smith was very good last year, but he's still Mike Smith. and going with a 41-year-old goalie who is injured a lot and Mikko Koskinen, who is bad and not really doing much to improve the defense again, is not a winning combination. Duncan Keith was not the answer. Losing Ethan Bear was not the answer. They did add like some smart pieces, like Morgan Geeky was a guy that I think was a smart add. But at the was that Geeky that they added? So they added.
I think they so.
Added, they
I
added think- somebody from Carolina that was very smart in that Ethan Bear trade.
Oh no, Morgan Geeky's now playing for Seattle. But you're right; they traded somebody for Ethan Bear, who's now playing in Carolina. So but you are whole- you're right.
For once, I am correct in my analysis. the team isn't built properly. And if you can't build properly around McDavid and Draisaitl and a guy like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who is very good, a Kyrie Yamamoto, who's very good, what are we doing here? You know, the team isn't coached well. Their defense isn't very good. And the goaltending's not very good. The fact that it took them this long to spiral is actually kind of shocking, because if this is what happens when Draisaitl or McDavid slows down a little bit, it's not a great sign for how the rest of their season's gonna go. We've seen it happen in the playoffs where they're kind of quiet and they get just trounced out in the first round. You don't gotta worry about losing in the first round of the playoffs if you don't make the playoffs at all this year.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned McDavid and Draisaitl slowing down, specifically Draisaitl scoring has dried up. He as of December 1st, heading into Wednesday night's game, he has 12 points in 13 games. That is very abnormal for Leon Draisaitl. And McDavid has now passed him in points. You know, you would expect that, but Draisaitl was for a while leading McDavid and was at least earlier in the season what many people were calling the heart race was between the two of them. People saying that, you know, Draisaitl deserved it earlier in the season because of what he's been doing, but that's all dried up right now. I mean, obviously he's a talented player. He's going to get it back, but the Oilers run through McDavid and Draisaitl's production. And when one or both are not performing, the team is going to go south. And that's what we've seen time and time again. That's what we're seeing now. You're right. The team composition is poor. And I believe like basically everybody called this out, from, you know, the goaltending with Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen. That's a volatile group to, you know, place your hopes in as a team. And you know, it started out the year okay, but it has since, you know, spiraled, alongside the team. And, you know, people are wondering, you know, is Dave Tippett, you know, on the hot seat, is, you know, coach up there in Edmonton, but will a coaching change even change anything? It's not as if like the, you know, the team seems to have, you know, phased out of his message or anything. Like, it's just the team composition in general is just bad. I mean, like, obviously McDavid and Draisaitl are going to lead in points on the team, but like, there's no one close to them. And I get it, but like, you have to give them some support. And like, Zach Hyman has been, you know, you know, he's got 20 points in 30 games. So like that addition's been all right, at least, but you know, one Zach Hyman is not going to make a competitive team. So is there anything they can do? You know, firing their coach feels like the easy move, but I don't know if that's going to change much with this team, because it's the composition that's the real problem.
And the thing with firing the coach is that means you're punting on the rest of the season, I assume, unless you can get a Claude Julien or someone in there that can actually get the most out of this. And Claude Julien's going to go coach at the Olympics right now for Team Canada. Do you think he's going to pass that up to go to Edmonton right now? Like, well, he might, because it's Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. But
yeah, but Edmonton winters, Scott, not very fun.
I mean, he did Montreal and Boston in New Jersey.
I feel like Edmonton's a different breed, but that's just me. I've seen the pictures. There's snow in like September or whatever. It's scary up there.
You're not incorrect in that. But my first thought is, if they're not going to fire the coach, they need to get a goalie who can stand up to this and help the defense. And I am pushing my own narrative a little bit with this, is that with the Canadians selling this year, they have two pieces that the Oilers should probably be interested in Jake Allen in net and Ben Chiarot on defense. Admittedly, I do not think Ben Chiarot's going to solve any of their problems. I do not care because they will give up a lot for him because he's big and mean and sometimes scores a goal on accident. But Jake Allen is a player they should be looking at. Mike Smith's old and broken down. You can't trust Mikko Koskinen, and you're not going to run Stuart Skinner into the ground right now. Allen's playing pretty well behind a AHL team in front of him. If I'm the Oilers, I'm looking at that and going, that's what we need. A guy who can start these games. Smith is your backup, and you can do whatever you want with Mikko Koskinen afterwards. Getting an actual solid NHL caliber starter, even if it's a 1B like Jake Allen, probably gets them into the playoffs and can help get them over that hump a little bit, I think, right now. But are they going to be smart enough, and how much are they going to give up to try and save this season? Because if they don't, it's going to be another real interesting offseason in Edmonton.
Yeah, that kind of leads me into the final point of this. Is the reason why I started talking about this is because NHL fans are back on the McDavid wanting out of Edmonton. Obviously, there's no confirmed stuff. This is just fans talking, being like, we got to get McDavid out of Edmonton. They're wasting his prime, all that stuff. He's still got, I believe, 4 years left after this one on his contract. And then I believe his no move clause kicks in after this season, so into next. Obviously, we're just talking hypotheticals, because I don't think that there's any way, at least right now, as it stands, the Oilers are moving on from McDavid. But you really have to feel for the guy. Like, it feels like we're looking right at another Jack Eichel situation, where, he's being kind of wasted in his prime. They're not building a team around him. I mean, sure, they've got some really nice offensive pieces, but the goaltending is bad, and they just haven't built a team around him. You can't just stick McDavid, maybe the best player in the world, but you can't just stick him on the team by himself. He can't carry it all by himself. This isn't basketball where stars can, lead the team like in that way. They need backup. They need support. I have to feel for McDavid here. Obviously, I don't think, trading McDavid or, McDavid wanting out is happening anytime soon. But, this season is going to dictate a lot, I think. And they're kind of staring down a precipice of, a lot of potential changes for this team. I still think McDavid's going to stay because, he's got it with his contract. But, he has to be feeling restless at this point. I mean, he's what? He's 20, he's like, what, 25, 24 right now? And it feels like a lot of his early prime years have kind of just been wasted by the Oilers' inability to build a team around him. And, we thought maybe this year they'd take a little step forward just in terms of their offense, like their adds on offense, but their goaltending was going to sink that regardless. But, he has to be looking around him and is like, what else can I do here? I'm continuing to put up, he put up 100 points in what, like 50 games, less than that last year, whatever it was. Like, he's an incredible hockey player, and it just sucks to see him wasted on a team that doesn't know how to build around him, basically.
It's disheartening to watch. He's so far and away the best player in the league. And to steal a quote from The Simpsons, he's got like the stone of shame hanging around his neck. And then even when things are going good, they just put the stone of triumph on there, and it's Mike Smith or it's a bad defense. The Oilers' inability to turn the best player of a generation into literally anything is one of the most monumental failures out of anyone in hockey. We talk about Taylor Hall. You talk about Nail Yakupov, about Nugent Hopkins struggling in this and that. Not having more than a single playoff round win with Connor McDavid on your roster is embarrassing. And here's the thing is, if they don't make the play, I don't even think making the playoffs is enough to make him stay this year. Even if they do, they have to go on a deep run, or I think people are leaving. We talk about it with Toronto, but this is even worse. At least Toronto has a core to build around. What does Edmonton have? If McDavid leaves, they're the worst team in the NHL, probably, or up there. I don't blame him. And I honestly can't wait for the McDavid trade market, because it's going to make the Jack Eichel one look like absolutely nothing, like child's play.
At least the McDavid one will probably be more active, because, Jack Eichel's health status kind of, hung over that like a cloud. So I would assume, if we're talking about a hypothetical McDavid trade, he is not you know, injured and need surgery at that point. So, but speaking of Jack Eichel, we're going to talk next, coming up after this break, about things we're looking forward to in the NHL in 2022, now that the calendar is flipped to a new year. So we'll be back right after this.
Bet Online has you covered this holiday season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before, as football continues its march through the College Bowl season and Pro Football Playoffs. Bet Online remains your number one spot for all the sports action this season. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. So don't wait to take advantage of all the new amazing offers available. BetOnline, where the game starts.
All right, Scott, we are back. So like I said before the break, we're going to be talking about, just real quick, about things we're looking forward to in the NHL in 2022. Because like I said, calendars flip to a new year. I know, you know, for a lot of people, it's a fresh start. You know, time to, you know, make those resolutions. And I mentioned Jack Eichel previously, but one of the things I'm really most looking forward to in 2022 in the NHL is seeing Jack Eichel's return and what he brings to the Vegas Golden Knights. Cause you know, they've had a really great last month of the season, and he's probably not going to show up before February, but you know, after the quote unquote Olympic break, that's now going to be used, you know, to make up games. It's very possible he comes back around then. And it's going to be really exciting, at least for me. That's kind of one of the things I'm looking forward to most, is just seeing Jack Eichel return to play. And what does he do on a team that's actually legitimately good? So what about you, Scott? Do you have any, I have a couple of things here, but is there anything else you want to, you know, anything you're looking forward to?
Well, for one thing, I completely forgotten Jack Eichel had gone to Vegas, because after he got traded and his intro, everything kind of slowed down and then all the COVID stuff happened. So it pushed that out of my brain. I am excited to see what it is, because we talked about the Oilers needing to get, you know, some wins here. Vegas keeps trading and signing all these big guys and not really developing a ton of their own. They got to cash in sooner or later, pardon the Vegas pun here, or you're staring at a team that's loaded up at the top end and has nothing else to fill it in with. And then, you know, that's when trades start happening to just get rid of guys here. I'm in 2022, and we'll touch on Alex Ovechkin in a second, I think, but I can't wait to see what the Arizona Coyotes do.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they're moving, if they're staying, but they have like 75 draft picks next year. And I cannot wait to see what they actually do with that, because if it's handled properly, the Coyotes are going to be so loaded with young talent in a few years that they could easily turn themselves into a long-term contender, assuming they have the proper management in place there. It's interesting because I know they're terrible now. It's management where they're playing is all up in the air, but they have so many picks to work with that they can turn that franchise around so, so quickly.
Yeah, the Coyotes are a great one for this, because there's so much around them. You're right. They've got a ton of draft picks. So from an organizational standpoint on the ice, there's a lot of excitement, because you know, there's a lot of potential here. And it feels like we haven't had this in a very long time for Arizona. Though, you know, moving off the ice with their management, I'm not sure how much I trust it, given their arena issues. And will they stay in Arizona? What's going to happen with them? Because you're right, the clock is ticking on them. They have until I believe like mid-June, late June, something like that, to find a, you know, to figure out an arena deal, or you know, they're going to be either moving around a whole bunch in Arizona, you know, maybe playing like a Montreal Expos type situation somewhere else, or just, you know, moving out of Arizona completely. So there's a lot up in the air. It's going to be a really key year for the Coyotes, for sure. My next one is, will teams like Nashville, Anaheim, and Detroit stick around in the playoff race? Anaheim is, I think, the biggest surprise for me. You know, they're solidly in second place in the Pacific, 2 points behind Vegas, who's in first place. Nashville is leading the Central as of Wednesday. And even Detroit is kind of pushing some of the, you know, wild card favorite teams in the East. I think that out of those three, that they're probably the team less likely to make it. But I'm kind of surprised with some of the teams that are sticking around in the race. And I think a lot of it is because, you know, teams like the Islanders, who we thought were going to be super good, you know, people had higher hopes for, you know, like a Vancouver or even like Seattle. I don't want to say that people thought that they were going to make any sort of run, but they were kind of a team that many thought could push into the playoff race. But, you know, with teams like them falling out, you know, the Nashvilles and the Anaheims and the Detroits have kind of stepped in there. And then my final one, which you touched on, is Alex Ovechkin and the Rocket Richard race, because like we said earlier, Leon Draisaitl is slowing down in points and in scoring goals. And Alex Ovechkin right now is one goal behind Draisaitl to tie for first in the NHL in goals. And it's just going to be a fun race, I think, to the end. Ovechkin, we talked about on the show before, it's awesome to see him continuing to produce at his age, and he's doing so in ways he hasn't before. He's picking up a lot of assists. I mean, obviously he's scoring goals, but like he's doing a whole bunch of different things, and it's really awesome to see. And every time I talk about Ovechkin, I get sad that we you know, we've missed so much time with him, but I'm trying to enjoy the time we have because he's so good now, and it's just such a fun thing to be watching right now as we move into the new year.
I love watching Ovechkin do this because it was always, can he do it? And then he just started this year and he's been incredible. He's not going to win the Hart or anything like that because, you know, McDavid exists. But even, you know, as he approaches 40, Alex Ovechkin is doing incredible things. And he's not only scoring goals, he's setting up goals. He's doing so much. And if he keeps on this pace, I can't wait to watch him break Gretzky's record, because that's someone since I fell in love with hockey, watching Ovechkin, he was just this lethal sniper, and I want it to happen. No one ever thought that they might top Gretzky's goal scoring record, but guess what? Like, Ovi might do that, and he might do it just purely despite all the people who said he can't. He'll play until he breaks it, honestly, and I don't think anyone would bet against him. With the Habs being as bad as they are this year, storylines like that give me something to pay attention to around the league. Honestly, it's really, I love watching it happen, because the demise of Alex Ovechkin has been greatly exaggerated.
Exactly. And we're watching history be made. And that's always really fun in, you know, in sports in general, to watch, you know, what people are going to talk about in, you know, 20, 30 years will have been, you know, real to us. Obviously I'm a newer hockey fan. So I didn't get to see, like, my hockey fandom is more newer than most, well, not, I guess not most people's, but my hockey fandom is more newer. So I missed out on, you know, a lot of things, like a lot of great, you know, players and moments growing up. I don't have any memories of, you know, guys like Eric Lindros and stuff like that. Which, you know, as a Flyers fan, it's a surprise, but I, you know, wasn't a hockey fan, around that time. So it's really awesome to be watching something like this happen unfold before our eyes. But before we move on to our final segment, which is pop culture stuff, so I'm excited to ask you about stuff that you've been doing, Scott. Is there anything else that you're looking forward to in the NHL in 2022? Or have we covered kind of a large margin of what you're looking forward to?
I think that's really everything. Like, I want to see what the trade deadline brings, because there's going to be a lot of desperate teams and there's going to be a lot of selling teams. Like, I look at the Habs. I know I keep bringing it back to that because they're a team I cover, but there's a lot there that the Montreal Canadiens, with a new GM, Jeff Gordon's in charge, in a new front office, the entire look of that organization could change by the end of January. And that means people coming back and traded GMs, et cetera, et cetera. It could change real fast, real, real quick.
Yeah, trade deadline is always super fun. I thought that was kind of a given for both of us, considering it's trade deadline. It's, I know we kind of meme on, you know, how slow it can often be, but, you know, the anticipation and the excitement usually is pretty high, but that's all for hockey. So coming up next, I'm going to ask Scott just a few things about what he's, you know, consumed in pop culture over the last couple of weeks, since, you know, we've all kind of had a bit of time to do stuff, and that'll be coming up right after this.
It's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. If yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar. Built Bar makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good you'll want to eat it, unlike other protein bars which can be chalky or waxy or taste like a chemical spill. You want to eat healthy, but it gets so boring. By like week 3, you might be thinking, this is just not worth it, where's the chocolate? Built bars, however, are covered in 100% real chocolate. Most Built bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams sugar, 4 grams net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which usually has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. Here's an idea for the new year. Go to all of your secret treat stashes, at home, in the pantry, in the office, in the car, wherever. Throw out all the sugary or calorie-filled treats and replace them with Built bars. So when you're craving a snack or a treat, you can reach for something that's healthy and tastes incredible. Even if you're not a fan of working out, you can at least eat something that tastes good and is good for you. That way, when you enjoy a delicious Built bar, you can almost count it as a workout. And there's so many flavors to choose from coconut almond, peanut butter brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, mint brownie, and so many more. In fact, Built is always looking for new limited-time flavors, so check out Built.com often to see what's new. So go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, and get 15% off of your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, Scott, we're going to end how Andrew and I usually do, is talking about anything pop culture we've done, you know, since we, you know, since the two of us have spoke. But like I said before the break, you know, we had a pretty sizable time without any hockey between, you know, the holiday break, games being postponed, you know, the Canadians not having played for a while. So is there anything in pop culture that you've done that you want to talk about, or just, you know, take the floor for anything fun? Because usually this is where Andrew and I get kind of, you know, more fun on this show, because we have a lot of interests other than hockey. So it's nice to, you know, kind of branch out and talk about something. So is there anything you've done over the past couple of weeks that you want to talk about?
Well, the first thing is I haven't seen No Way Home yet. It's on my list of things to see once I have any moment of free time to actually sit and, you know, have that ability. So I'm hoping this weekend, since there are no Montreal Canadiens games and there's no Laval Rocket games to cover, I want to go see that. But the biggest thing was in December, I watched season 2 of The Witcher, got extremely mad at season 2 of The Witcher.
Ooh,
and spicy. Now I want to replay. I want to, one, read the books again, because the books are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I restarted playing Fallout 3 for like the 30th time, because living in a horrible, you know, I can't think of the word, but despondent wasteland. Why not play one too, where there's a plague going around and changing things? So, but I also downloaded Halo Infinite for fun. It's been just a couple games here or there to kind of do that. But The Witcher season 2 has been the biggest thing. And as someone who really loved the books, I see some of the storylines they're following, but everything feels very last season of Game of Thrones, where it's just plot point, jump, plot point, jump, plot point, jump. And it's so close to being what I want, and yet it is so far from being what it needs to be. And it really makes me sad.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I also did watch The Witcher season 2. I've only played The Witcher 3, The Wild Hunt. So that's my only touchstone, like a lot of people, because there's so much out there, reading and, you know, playing video games. So that's my only touchstone. But I knew some people were annoyed with the changes. I don't think we'll go into it like a big, you know, spoiler about it, mostly because I want to, you know, get through the segment, you know, pretty quickly. But, you know, I think I can understand the changes they made, because I read up on it too, because I didn't, obviously, like I said, I only played the third game. So my knowledge is limited in what, you know, what, like how characters get to those points. I guess I'm not surprised that, you know, a person who really enjoys the books is kind of not happy with the way the show has deviated a little bit from them, it seems. Not even a little bit, but I think a lot, actually.
A lot of it, in that it's like, hey, they got to this same ending point, but how they got there is completely not how it happened in the books. And I don't want to be that Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings person where I'm like, the books did it better. But quite frankly, the books did it better right now. So I'm gonna let it digest for a little bit, and then I'm gonna watch seasons 1 and 2 back to back again and see if that changes everything. But man, not the strong season I was hoping for. I still love Henry Cavill, and I still enjoyed it, but yeah, it's
I think I enjoyed it while I was watching it, but I think it's one of those things where we maybe need to see, you know, how this plays out through the seasons. I know that's, you know, basically tossing, having an opinion years down the line, but you know, we're in the middle of a story being told, and we'll see if, you know, it was worth the deviations to get where we're going in the end. But that's a good one. The only other thing I wanted to shout out during my holiday break is I watched Encanto on Disney Plus, the new Disney film, and God, I can't get some of the songs out of my head. So if you're, you know, an animation person, a Disney person, I mean, Andrew and I are big Disney / Marvel / Star Wars people. So that's kind of a lot of what we talk about in this pop culture segment. We did a huge segment on Marvel in our last two shows before Christmas. Definitely, though, recommend Encanto. Have you seen it, Scott? Do you have any interest in seeing it? Are you an animation person at all, a Disney person?
So when I got home on Saturday from work, Carly was actually watching it on the couch here, and she explained it to me, and I went, I have been sad enough recently that I do not need to make have a Disney movie make me cry. So she said it was fantastic, and the music and everything seems outstanding. I've seen nothing but good things. It's going to be one of those situational things. It took me a while to watch Coco. I don't regret watching Coco. I do know how sad that movie makes me, however, in a good way, but like, I am glad to see not only just representation film like that, but just it's so good that Disney is creating so many new things here. And they're so good. And Encanto, by all accounts, was phenomenal. It's finding the time to sit down and watch that as well, in addition to so many other things that I've missed recently.
Yeah, I get that completely. You know, between work and the podcast and everything, it's hard to sometimes find time to, you know, do things and, you know, try different things. But that's why I always like including the segment, because it encourages us to, you know, do things. We have stuff to talk about basically for this segment. But thank you so much, Scott, for joining the show. I'll go into my ending spiel in a second, but please plug your stuff. I know this wasn't like a typical guest episode, but you know, since you're so cool and awesome, please plug your stuff before I end off this episode.
So you can follow the show I co-host with my co-host, The Active Stick, Laura Seba, at @LO_Canadians on Twitter. You can find my writing at Habs Eyes on the Prize at SB Nation. You can follow me on Twitter, if that's your thing, at Scott Matla, and you follow my co-host at The Active Stick. We obviously do episodes 5 days a week as part of Locked On. Mary, thank you so much for having me on. It was a ton of fun to actually not just be a guest on a show, but guest host someone else's show like this. It was a real fun time.
Yeah, and I absolutely owe you, you know, podcast guest, additional co-host if you need it. Obviously, I'm, you know, not the biggest Canadians person, but I can, you know, fake it until I make it. But that is all we have for you today on the Crosscheck NHL Show. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Make sure to follow us on your podcast platform of choice, from Apple to Odyssey to Spotify, and rate and review us while you're at it. You can follow the pod at Crosscheck NHL on Twitter, me at Mary C. Clark on Twitter, and Scott at Scott Matla on Twitter. Thanks for making the Crosscheck NHL Show your first listen every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll be back on Tuesday with some more puck talk, but now make your second listen Locked On Bets. Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling.